and welcome back to the Stripe Show podcast, brought to you by Encore Golf. Encore designs high performance golf balls for players of all skill levels and swing speeds. Get fitted for your perfect golf ball today, EncoreGolf.com. Well, your two hosts, we're missing is Froggy, Travis, but it's Thursday. We're back with your last minute look into the Ryder Cup that starts finally tomorrow morning. I feel like it's been 3 weeks since we've seen a golf tournament on TV. But you are joining us live from Milwaukee before attending the action at Whistling Straits this weekend. Did you have a good travel day?
Yeah, I just got in here in Milwaukee, my first time to the state of Wisconsin. I've already got some cheese here, a Milwaukee Best that I'll probably crack into here a little post-podcast. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. Whistling Straits is about an hour north of here. And I can tell you, I've been watching a little bit of the telecast on the way up, and being out here in Milwaukee, the wind is moving right now, and it almost feels a bit Scottish link style on the golf course right now. So we needed to warm up a little bit, which is supposed to, and the wind to die down just a little bit to give us the full home court advantage. But it's good to be here.
What is your schedule? Why are you there? You don't typically travel like this. So tell us what's up.
Yeah, I'm emceeing a couple events. A group called On Location will be at the Harley-Davidson Museum tonight, and emceeing that event, and then we'll be at a different location on Friday, and I'll be spending some time with Tony Jacklin, a little Q&A with him. I believe Scott Verplank, Claude Harmon III will join us on Friday, so a little Q&A style, a little party, a couple of drinks, and reminisce about what just happened in the Ryder Cup as we get it rolling here tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it is Thursday. Like we said, I feel like we've covered every storyline and every, we're running out of things to talk about. But Kohler is a good place. I spent some time there in 2012 when I played in the U.S. Open at Black Wolf Run. Obviously, we're at Whistling Straits, which is like their sister course. So they're affiliated in some way. But about the course, it's link style. And like you said, it does on paper, right, tend to favor the Europeans, especially with the wind. So what should we be looking out for on TV this week?
Well, I think, the wind's going to dry it out a little bit. It looks kind of linksy. The wind's going to make it feel certainly linksy. I think the way it'll play will be American based as far as the ball carrying through the air. We don't want the wind to be howling too much. Perhaps that'll take away a little bit of the advantage. These fairways, it's Pete Dye. So when you stand on the tee, there's going to be a couple moments where when you're looking at the TV, you're going to ask yourself, where the hell are they going? Because you can't see the fairway. And Pete Dye is the master at getting you looking different places. These practice rounds are really important to get your sight lines off the tee, especially when the wind changes. I think carrying the ball 300 plus, which we have a lot of guys that can do that, will give them the advantage. It's not going to be much rough off the fairway. I do think it'll be a carry it to the hole type of thing. I think the greens will remain receptive. The ball's not going to be bouncing up and around like we would see overseas. So there's some trouble around the greens though. That's for sure. I'm very curious on the pin locations. How difficult do they want to get the pins? I've been talking the last 2 weeks. I'd like to keep it pretty vanilla, use the length. I think we're better iron players and just keep it kind of vanilla and let's make some putts, which has been difficult because Europe, as you know, seems to make all the big putts.
Yeah, they do. But let's talk about the wind, because that's something that I feel like an instruction, which you're an instruction, as we know, you don't necessarily teach a lot unless you're on a, a playing lesson or something like that with your instructor. So when you're at a course and you're playing on the weekend and the wind kicks up, what's your typical strategy? What would you advise for those weekend golfers? How do you gauge that?
Well, just in general, most amateurs come up short. So, just taking more club in general is kind of a hard thing to do for most amateurs because they don't take enough into greens and they come up short more times than not. So when you get the wind going, especially into the wind and crosswinds, it's going to knock it down even more. So, first and foremost, you're always encouraging amateurs to take enough club and sometimes it's even two more clubs and hit that shot, the stock shot. And then if they can flight it, of course, that's an advantage. And just learning to flight the ball down is a shot that really all amateurs should learn, regardless if the wind is blowing or not, because it's going to suggest how to lean the shaft forward, deal off the face. And that's just a high caliber shot. So when you look at players who add loft, now the wind's blowing, it tends to eat it up more. And so that lower trajectory, learning how to hit that, taking enough club, more than enough club, allows you to flight it and allows you not to swing as hard. And we know that's conducive in the wind.
I love a good punch shot. And there was a whole time in my career where I think that's all I hit. And let me tell you what, I hit it further than I did trying to with that full swing.
Because the D loft, that's right. That's right. And you're going to see that shot this week. There's no question about it. You're going to see a lot of little sawed off shots. And for these guys, trust me, they will be hitting shots. And this is an interesting thing. They'll be hitting shots, especially into the wind. And even downwind, you'd be surprised how they want to keep it down, even a little bit downwind. But getting comfortable hitting like a 7-iron from 150, you know, that's something that they don't do very often. And I do think there's going to be some pretty good gusts coming off Lake Michigan where you're going to be seeing a lot of club and certainly sawed off types of shots.
Yeah, that makes sense. It'll be interesting to watch a lot of the holes there on the lake as we know. But let's talk about what we've seen so far from both teams. Both teams have been up there for a few days. As we talked a little bit before the pod, Europe seems to be having a little bit more fun. USA, a little bit more business type feel. That's pretty standard for the Ryder Cup for us. What are your initial thoughts just looking at how the teams have interacted in the past few days?
Well, I mean, I tweeted it out. Europe looks just far more comfortable, you know, hanging around each other. I think it's just being around each other for this period of time. Europe, you know, in the way that the European Tour is and the way a lot of these guys came up, they travel together. It's not uncommon to be doing a lot of different things together when you're on tour. On the European Tour, Eddie Pepperell talked about that on the podcast a couple months ago. And then, you know, in the United States, it tends to be a little bit more like business-like. You kind of travel by yourself, and you have your own teams, and that's who you travel with. And then maybe a dinner or two or something like that. But it's a little bit more business-like. It's a little bit more from an individual standpoint, your own brand, entrepreneur, they have their own logos, you know, and that's very much corporate America. So I think that's kind of what you see when they get around each other. It doesn't look as natural as it would from the European Tour perspective, because I do think they buy in more to that team atmosphere. You know, they have that trust. They've joked around. They know how far they can push it with one another. So it just comes across very authentic. And you saw it yesterday with these cheese heads, you know, when they come out and they're wearing the cheese heads and they're kind of buying in, you know, they're getting everybody to kind of, you know, gravitate towards them. They're good guys. They're likable, and it's just brilliantly played. So, you know, they just look loose. And I hope in the United States behind closed doors, they can, you know, they're bonding and they're going to be able to come out and play instinctive and loose golf, because in the past, I don't think that's been the case. Europe certainly has.
That makes sense. I mean, I did see the cheesehead thing. It was funny. Yeah. It was trying to win over the, you know, Wisconsin whole vibe, everybody who's there. You were traveling today, though, and I will say we need to give the U.S. a little credit, because they came out on the first tee today with a beer cannon. Things
okay,
silver beer cannons.
Perfect. Yeah,
honestly, they didn't need the cannons because the beers kept going over the stands, but it's the thought that counts.
Yeah,
and they had Team USA on them, they were loading beers in, and Jim Furyk was running around the first tee. That's the kind of stuff that we need to see, and I do think that I don't know if maybe it's the day before they're leaning into it a little bit more, but Bryson galloping around the first tee. This is a chance for him, I really think, to flip the script on what people think about him. But let's talk about that a little bit. Do we think that the Brooks-Bryson feud is really put to bed, as Twitter and everyone says it is?
I mean, I think it's a little staged. You know, and that's just my thought from the outside looking in. The video of Brooks walking up to Bryson and they're capturing. I mean, it looked almost a little Hollywood. A little stage to like, hey guys, there's no problem here. Oh, okay. You know, so, you know, I don't think they're walking out of there going to Disneyland together anytime soon. I mean, I think they're putting their differences aside for the week and off they go. Who knows? Maybe they did have dinner and it is authentic and they're moving on. It feels staged to me. It feels a little forced, but it is good to see you know, America coming out and showing some personality and loosening up a little bit, because that's what they need to do. I mean, Stricker, his number one job is to, he's got the better team, you know, and when you have the better team, can you create the environment that's going to allow them to flourish? That's the number one job. I think Stricker, you know, he's a great guy, but he's serious. He's businesslike. You know, can he loosen up a little bit and create that environment with some of the other vice captains, like you talked about, with Furyk, who can show some personality, likes to hoop it up a little bit. Freddie's calm and, you know, can crack some jokes. Can they loosen up and just go out and just play instinctive golf? And if they can do that, they're the better team and they'll win.
That's what's interesting about coaches when you have really good golfers, right? Because it's like, it's the same thing with like college and even high school coaches. Like you're not coaching them. You're more so putting them in the environment that they need to succeed.
Right.
And that's what I don't know if people really grasp fully, is Stricker's just making, they're kind of babysitting, making sure everybody's like there and fine, and then putting them in the right situation to succeed. He's not going out there and telling them that their swing's too flat.
No, Stricker, you know, there's some X's and O's, I think, with some of the matchups. I mean, there's probably some things to look at statistically, especially from an alternate shot standpoint. You know, I've said all along, I think Stricker has to do two things. One is he's got to get that environment right where these guys do come together and play for something bigger than them. And they're loose. I mean, that's number one. Number two, I think he's got to get these alternate shot pairings right. They've got to come out of Friday morning at least 2-2. They can't come out of their 3-1. Now they start losing the mojo. And it's like, here we go again. Europeans are way better at alternate shot. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I think I have an idea what he's going to do, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens Friday morning. Americans can set the stage. They come out and they roll 3-1, very much like they did in Hazeltine. I think they can rout these guys. But, you know, it's kind of like one of those things. The more you let them hang around, this is an experienced group in Europe. They know how to win this. And I'll tell you, Samantha, it's just brilliant to watch their strategy too. I mean, and it starts with their social media, some of the videos that come. I mean, it's just brilliant that when you look at them, the first thing, you just kind of relax, you laugh, they feel approachable. You know, they come out with the cheese heads, they deflect all stress and expectation to the Americans. Hey, we're on their soil. The golf course is going to be set up for them. They're the better players in official world golf. I mean, it's just them, you know, always like they're the better players. And they just like, hey, we're just here to play golf and we know what we're doing and we're confident and off we go. So I love their approach. They're just so much better at this. When you really sit back and analyze it from the team competition than the Americans are, I think there's a lot to learn. I think America will win, but I think there are things to learn from this European team and the way they handle this road game. It's brilliant.
How much of a impact do you think passion plays in this specific tournament? Because you look at a guy like Ian Poulter, who was picked as a captain's pick, who's not near the form or talent as most of the guys on the USA team, maybe all, but he's has never lost. And there's some crazy stat about him. He's great in the Ryder Cup. He shows up for it because he's passionate about it.
Yeah.
How much can you take that into consideration when it comes to Europe too?
I think it's everything. He wants to be there. You know, I think I go back to Brooks and he talks about how it's hard for him to get up for other tournaments. And he just really can focus around major championships. It shows, you know, and then you get into the deflection of, well, I guess I'm not wired for this team competition. Right. And I think as much as I appreciate the transparency and the honesty, I do think that's shared by some other players. I do. I think there's guys that can take or leave the Ryder Cup. I think it's lost some of its appeal. I know when I was growing up, it was the thing. And I do think in America, Jordan Spieth said his number one goal this year was to get back on the Ryder Cup. That's a big statement. So I think with Spieth and JT and Xander and Cantlay, I think it means a ton. I think there's a few that are, it means something, but it's not the most important thing. For Ian, it's the most important thing. And for a lot of these players, like a Lee Westwood, a Fleetwood, Sergio, if it's not the most important thing, it's right there. It's 1 or 1A, you know? So that's the way they've been able to carry this tradition on, I think, that was established by Seve and others, and really own it And it showed winning 9 of the last 12, where I think it's lost some appeal and it's lost some momentum on the American side. And I'm hoping we can recapture that. I think the one thing that I really like, Samantha, about the American team is that they have 6 rookies. I think with the rookies and the youth of this team, the average age is just under 30. They can come out and look, I wasn't here the last 10 years. This is our time. It's time to begin a new chapter, a new legacy, and let's restart this thing back up and let's get on a run of our own. And that's what I'm hoping happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch unfold, especially tonight, the pairings at 5 o'clock with the opening ceremony. But real quick, back to what you said about Brooks, because watch his press conference today. Two interesting points that I took. One was somebody asked if he's ready to play 36 holes a day, which to me at first sounded like a stupid question. Then when I kind of absorbed it, I'm like, I guess that kind of makes sense. They don't usually play.
Right.
Often, nor, I mean, that's not a very walkable course, as we know. So it was interesting. He described himself. The first thing that came out of his mouth was, man, I'm like glass. And I'm like, what? And he kind of paused. Then he's talking about how fragile he is and how his knees are bad and his wrist is bad and blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't have his physio there. He says he's at 100%. But that I felt like was an interesting way to describe it. Considering he acts so, you know, ultra rubber tough, like, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on Brooks this week. I really do. I think he's the way he's handled it. And, you know, some people that's not a big deal. I think it is a big deal. You know, I think Brooks has done a lot this year off the course with the Bryson feud, with the interview with Golf Digest, the way he handles, you know, some of the questions. I mean, there's a lot of pressure there for Brooks to go out and perform here. And if he doesn't, then, you know, he very well might hear it from some of the American fans. So I think there's some pressure there. I don't think Brooks is going to play 36. I think that'd be silly considering his injuries. You know, I think what we're going to see Friday morning is we're going to see JT and Spieth go out first. I mean, to me, those are the leaders. Those are the guys I'm hoping that's kind of taking the bull by the horn in the locker room. And I think you're going to see them number one. And then I think you're going to see Cantlay and Xander number two. And I think if those four guys can go out and set the tone and they're playing some decent golf, I think you'll see them for five. I think you'll see them for five matches. Those are the four guys. Now Morikawa I would put in there, but I don't know where Morikawa's at physically. Easler, he was tired at the end of last year and he was having some back issues. That's why he didn't play good. So I think Morikawa, you have to kind of maybe show him three times. But those first four, to me, are the dogs. They're the leaders. Brooks, I think you save for four ball, best ball in the afternoon. I think you save Bryson for best ball in the afternoon. I could see DJ and Morikawa getting teamed up in the morning. And DJ is another one of those guys that I think could go five. I would love to see DJ play his best golf of the year right now. Because I think, you know, DJ's kind of a guy. I was using this analogy with someone on, you know, on the airplane coming up. I was like, you know, it's like DJ to me is someone, it's like that star wide receiver that you want to get in the game early, you know, in an NFL game. Let's just throw him like a little 2 yard out, you know, and get his game going. And DJ could be like that morning guy that could go out and just blitz it and then just, when DJ goes, it's like, get out of the way. Right. So I think DJ and Morikawa could get matched up in the morning. And I think it'd be interesting if DJ's on it, he could play five. And then I'm holding on to Berger and Harris as the other ones. I'd like to see them play alternate shot. I have a feeling it's going to be Berger and Koepka, but I'm hoping it's Berger and Harris English.
I like the Berger Harris English, angle. I haven't heard that yet because I think everybody is so caught up on Berger, Koepka, the Jupiter boys. Yeah,
Florida.
Yeah, the whole thing. But I'll tell you what, you mentioned DJ, and I swear with all these storylines, it's almost like I forgot he was there, like going to be there. We haven't talked about DJ in so long.
Yeah.
He is good at that. But one point that I know you weren't there listening at the press conference with Koepka. about his comments towards Golf Digest. I just want to say this is a quote, so I don't get it wrong. Quote, "I never said it was a negative experience," talking about the Ryder Cup. And then he says, "You guys spun it that way. I said it was different. I've never played any of these team events. I didn't play Walker Cup, didn't play Junior Ryder Cup, never played anything. I just said it was different. That doesn't mean it's bad. I enjoyed it. Like I said, I wouldn't be nervous on the first tee if I didn't care." So we don't have to go into that, but just wanted to he kind of got on the defense a little bit there and got a little bit, kind of caught off guard when somebody asked him about it. So it was an interesting take there.
It is. And I think I think for Brooks, like, look, we're cheering for Brooks. Like we need Brooks. To me, Brooks is this athlete, right? And he's this alpha male. And like, he's so, he positions himself that way. And, he's played other sports. So it's like, this team competition can be, to me, it's like, gosh, Brooks feels like a good fit for this, but yet he kind of positioned it like it wasn't, And so here we are, and you add that up with the stuff that happened with Bryson, and, it's been a distraction. And so, we need Brooks to come in and buy in, play great, and contribute to this Team USA. Brooks is a young guy. He's a dog when he's on. He's a great player, and we need him. We need our great players to come in and want to be there and buy in and contribute and play great. And I think Brooks with Finau four ball could be phenomenal. I think those two together Friday afternoon would be must watch TV.
Your three keys for USA to win, rapid fire.
Ooh, three keys. I feel like, the one thing that Europe's done in the past is their leaders and good players play well, and when you look historically, we know Tiger and Phil haven't played well. I think it's a good thing we're flipping the switch. I think so we've got, it's a new look. It's a new era, right? And I think that's the way you got to treat it. So who are the leaders? To me, it's Spieth and JT. I think they could go out and set the tone. I really do. I don't want to say like they have to play well to win, but I think them going out and setting the tone, because I think they're going to go out Friday morning, Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, and Sunday morning. Like, I think they're going to lead with them. That's what I would do. So I think that's number one, that team. Number two, I'm going to go then Patrick and Cantlay following that up. They're two rookies. We have six rookies. Those two, you've got Colin, you've got Harris, you got Scheffler, and you've got Berger. So six rookies, that's a big number, but they're all experienced. They know how to play. So I think that team could be interesting as number two. And then, I think number three, you could go a number of different ways. There's probably a guy that we're not talking about that's going to capture us 3 points. Finau is the lone bright spot in France. He played well there, but it feels like number three's got to be some kind of Brooks Bryson contingency. Like, one of those guys has to be good. They can't both go out and go 0-3 like Bryson did 3 years ago. So we need those guys to one of those guys, I think, to step up and follow the lead of those first two groups.
Well, I'll say, I know that you aren't rooting for it, but I still have hope that Stricker will put Bryson and Brooks together. If he wants to break the internet, if he wants to be, no. I think he does it. And I'm going to hold on to that. And then when he does it, we can say that I was right.
I think Carson Daly's going to come in and give a motivational speech, why that shouldn't happen.
Apparently Carson Daly is flying up to give a motivational speech tonight to Team USA, which makes about as much sense to me as when I see Michael Phelps narrating the Ryder Cup commercial on NBC.
Well, there's not a lot of options for America to have guys come in who've had a lot of great success as of late to give that speech. The guy that needed to give the speech was the guy I had the podcast on Monday, which is Lanny Watkins. He's the only two guys that have had more success than Lanny Watkins playing is Arnold Palmer and Billy Casper. So Lanny Watkins is the guy to have him go in there. But I think Lanny would go in there and perhaps rough them up a little bit, you know, and give them some tough love, which isn't a bad thing either. But probably not the place right before you go out and play. So they haven't had a lot. Carson Daly's a very interesting pick. I don't know. But let's hope they come out, they're loose, they play, and they set the tone early with those two groups.
Maybe the whole thing is just a promotion for Golf Pass.
Probably.
That's probably the only thing I could draw from Carson Daly. I don't even know. So Harrington is going to get a tattoo of the winning score if Europe wins.
Okay.
Last thing I'll say, if you had to go with, not just because you live in the U.S. and you want them to win, do you really think the U.S. is going to win by logic?
I do. I think they're going to win. This golf course is set up for them. I just think the competitors that they have in there, I think this could be the beginning of kind of turning the tide. I was very happy to see the six rookies make it. I think Jordan and JT can be the logical leaders. They're young guys. DJ's the oldest. He's not even that old. You know, Brooks is going to be around. Cantlay and Xander are coming into their own. I mean, like they can put on a run here, you know, like they can get on a run here. And I think home field advantage, hey guys, let's rally this up a little bit. Let's come together. Let's go out and let's beat these guys' ass, right? Because when you look at them on paper, it's not close. From a strokes gain total standpoint, I'll give you just a little feel here before we jump off. Strokes gain total, okay, over the last 100 rounds. So this year, for the most part, John Rahm, we know, is number one. He's John Rahm's best player. And John Rahm and Rory have to go out and play well, because the Europe best players historically have played well. I do think the kicker for Europe, real quick, I've been asked this, is Fleetwood and Hatton. I think those are the two guys. They haven't played good this year. Fleetwood lost his card. Those two guys need to play well. If they don't, I think it's going to be difficult for them. So Rahm's one. Then it goes DJ, Xander, Cantlay, Berger, Thomas, Bryson. Okay, so the next six guys are Americans. And strokes gained total. Then it goes Victor. And then we jump into Finau and Morikawa. It's just front-loaded strokes gained total last 100 rounds. Then you go all the way to the bottom. And the last six guys, there's 24 players. 19's Lowry, 20's Garcia, 21's Poulter, 22's Fleetwood, 23's Westwood, 24's Wiesberger. The last six guys, strokes gained total last 100 rounds, on the very bottom from Europe. So that's a pretty big difference when you look at it from a statistical standpoint. But you don't play golf on paper. You play it on the links. Europe does a brilliant job of coming together as a team, the trust, they play with heart, and they deflect and they position things so beautifully, I think, to the public. It adds pressure and expectation to the United States, who tend to play tighter. So we'll see. Can they come out and play loose, set the stage, and put these guys away? I think they can. And I think they could do it to the tune of, what was it? I think they beat us by 6 or 7 points in France. I think if they could do that, right? They have that kind of skill set on their team to put this team away by 5 or 6.
Well, you talked about strokes gained approach, but I would argue that strokes gained passion. Yes. Europe is 12.
It means more. I think through and through it does. I mean,
yeah,
man to man, perhaps not, right? You can't put a blanket over every, but I think through the bag and all the players and caddies and vice president, there's a, you know, this is how it goes. This is important. And it's beat into you very similar to like right here, like cheese in the Green Bay Packers. It's beat into you when you're young, and then you watch it and then you come up and you're a part of it. And it's like, dang right, this is unbelievable. The best thing in the world. So yeah, we'll see. I think Friday morning, 2-2, 3-1 Americans, off we go, you know, 3-1 Europe. We're in for a fight.
Well, we'll see. And you'll be right there on the ground to watch it. So yes, be sure to stay tuned to Travis Fulton Golf on Instagram, Travis Fulton on Twitter and Facebook. And we will be back at you next week for some long drive coverage.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking to some long drive people. We're going to have a series of how to hit longer drives on social media. So stay tuned for that. And Travis, have fun this weekend.
All right. Thank you, Samantha. We'll be in touch. No pod tomorrow. We'll be back on Monday.
Let's take a second to talk about the folks over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation across the golf industry and with golfers everywhere for its combination of value, performance, and customer service. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is flipping the script on golf technology through perimeter-weighted balls made with the high-density particles and proprietary nanotransitional layer offering players enhanced accuracy, control, and distance. Encore recently added the Vero X1 to its suite of award-winning golf balls, one that already included the Golf Digest gold-rated Elixir and low-compression Avant 55. Through its full suite of golf balls, Encore can help transform any golfer's game. Visit encoregolf.com/Travis Fulton for more info about Encore and start revolutionizing your game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.